This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Like most car buyers, you want to get the most for your money. That's why more Mazda buyers choose Ramsey Mazda. Get impressive offers on a new Mazda CX-30 or a Mazda CX-5 starting at just $29,276. Over 1,000 new Mazda vehicles to choose from. Visit RamseyMazda.com. Get the most for your money at Ramsey Mazda. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda.
Happy Friday out there. It is April 11, 2025. That is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, for the day, the executive producer of the show. That will be George Ruggiero at KingGeorge94 on X. King George, what's happening, brother?
Gabe. Day four of this week of some double shifts.
Oh, well, double or triple at this point for you?
Double. I didn't have Jason and John today. Yeah. Okay, that was just the last 3 days.
You've been rolling, man. I'm proud of you. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. It's great
getting
to be
some
here.
Some more work. You're doing a good job.
Great to be here.
And I'm glad to have you, too. You're not talked out, are you? You're good?
No, we're all good. Ready to rock and roll on some.
Good to hear. We have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll see if George can make it through the whole thing. As far as guests are concerned, we're going to have Trevor Lane from Lakers Nation and from the Front Office Show with Keith Smith at 4:30. I want to cover Grizzlies and then the rest of the NBA. I want to give, you know, he covers the Lakers closely. I want to get his take on what we saw on Wednesday with Luka Doncic going on the road and eviscerating his former team, then getting a standing O for eviscerating his former team. Definitely a chef's kiss on that from Luka Doncic and the whole thing. We have no precedent for it, but I want to get Trevor's take on it from the Lakers perspective. 5 o'clock, David Kopp will join, as he does every single Monday, Wednesday, and, of course, on a Friday. He's from CBS Sports. With him, one of the big topics today is going to be about college football. We'll get to a little college basketball and transfer portal and everything else. But have you seen what's going on at Tennessee right now with Nico Iamaleava?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on?
That's the question, isn't it?
We have his dad calling a reporter, Pete Nakos, from On Three, a B-word.
Did you see the response from On
Nico,
Three about that?
Nico is sitting out practice today amid rumors of him wanting more money in a re-upped NIL deal. But his dad's saying it's fake. Everyone else is saying they're correct on their reporting. I want to get to the bottom of this.
It's a whole mess.
I think the truth is somewhere. We just have to find it. We have to pick through the mess. But David Kyle will join at 5 o'clock, and then 6 o'clock per normal. We'll talk some Grizzlies and everything that went wrong. And we're going to do that off the top as well. But we're going to talk with Parker Fleming at 6 o'clock from Substack Elitist. Make sure you go subscribe. Free Grizzlies, NBA Draft, Substack. Blitz at 6:30, Rewind at 6:50. Then we'll get you to the weekend. All right. Let's do it. Grizzlies dropped to 47-33. They're now 7th in the West. 2 games left. They're going to have a short night of rest against the Nuggets tonight. But last night, let's go ahead and get to the takeaways, if you will. I'm going to start with the good. I'll choose to start with the good, and then we'll get to the bad. The first half of that game last night absolutely ripped. What an unbelievable display by both teams. Shot making. The Grizzlies were 70% from the field in the first half. They ended the game 50% from the three-point line, but they still lost by 16. That's a different discussion that we'll get to in a second. But that first half, George, I was enjoying the hell out of myself. There were signs of what was to come, but that was very fun. Both teams competed at a high level, and it is in stark contrast to what we've seen from these two teams in the past. I look at that 2022 first-round playoff series where the Grizzlies won in six as one of the worst and dumbest playoff series that I've seen played of the 2020s. Now, somebody had to remind me, Dillon Brooks no longer plays for the Grizzlies, D'Angelo Russell no longer plays for the Timberwolves. That explained it to me.
Yeah, fair.
But it was in stark contrast last night's first half to what we've seen from these teams in the past.
Yeah, the first half, to put it as clearly as you did, especially, you know, as it happened, just saying it ripped. It was awesome. It was back and forth action. Just, it was a fun first half. It was great.
Yep. 100%.
Halftime. Well, we're going to talk about something that they talked about at halftime, yeah. But we'll get there.
Yeah.
And then
the second half and the third quarter in particular.
But, like, there was so much good to actually take away from the first half. I mean, first quarter, we're talking about Jaw off to just a blazing hot start to the game. And then
Dez was 6 for 6 from three in the first half.
Dez in that second quarter. My God.
He was on fire. And that's why you score 72 points and a half.
Yeah, I mean, it was great.
And I do think, looking at Tomas Asalo's offense and how he deployed it in the first half, a lot of ball screens, as we have seen with Zach Edey, mm-hmm. trying to get Zach Edey and Ja Morant going. I thought in the first half, all those ball screens created a lot of chaos for the Timberwolves, and it was unpredictable. And Ja was doing his normal Ja thing with the acrobatic finishes at the rim, and it's just unguardable at times. And that's what you saw. I think the second half, though, the Timberwolves came out, especially on the defensive end, locked in and realized what the Grizzlies were going to go to pretty consistently. But that third quarter,
can we just rip the Band-Aid?
Timberwolves 18 for 21 from the field, score a franchise record 52 points. And to be honest with you, it should have been clear, even going into half, that this was a possibility. I was waiting for the shoe to drop. I didn't think it would be that bad. But they gave up 67 points in the first half, and there was a lot of open, warm-up, three-point jumpers from driving kicks from Anthony Edwards. Nikhil Alexander-Walker had a couple. Jaden McDaniels had a couple. Dante DiVincenzo had a couple. Julius Randle was going off. He had 31 last night.
Three.
But, you know, even though I thought in the first half the defense was bad, I didn't expect it to be that pitiful by the time we got to that third quarter. Historically pitiful. And I think it's pretty clear. It's sort of a copy and paste of what we've seen since the trade deadline. Sure, they don't have the personnel. But around the perimeter, guys can't stay in front of their matchup. Ultimately, they funnel it to the rim. And there's two options from there. The bigs have to help, which does not help with the foul trouble that they got into last night, Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson Jr. They could not defend without fouling last night because of the positions that the perimeter defenders were putting them in. But then the other option, if you're not getting your bigs into foul trouble, which is already bad, is that there's going to be a backside guy standing wide open at the three-point line, Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Julius Randle, whoever the hell it is, they're going to be wide open from the three-point line. Step into it, rhythm jumper, no one in their face, late closeout, here you go. So either way, you're screwed. Yeah. And we have seen that time and time again. I think this three-game winning streak that they were on kind of got us in this mindset that, okay, maybe they're turning the corner, maybe they're starting to understand things. But defensively, the compounding of the issues is the ultimate issue. You don't have the personnel, and that personnel also doesn't have understanding. That is a potent, disgusting, terrible mix if you want to compete against the best in the West with the Western Conference the way it looks right now.
Yeah, and to that point of it just being this horrible like concoction of the bad when it comes to defensive basketball, if we look back and we think back to really the kind of end of Taylor Jenkins' tenure here, a lot of us were complaining about just a general lack of effort. It all looked very lackadaisical, just people kind of just standing around watching. This wasn't that. This was guys like actively trying, but they just don't know what they're doing a lot of the time when it comes to that positioning. I mean, we're talking guys getting blown by. To me, one of the worst about that has been Santi at this point, what happened to him between, I understand the
never been a good defender.
I'm
but...
not saying he was ever a good defender, but there to me has been a clear difference in his level of play, offensive and defensive, from pre-calf injury to now.
Yeah.
He's an absolute turnstile at this point, and he doesn't really have the pace to get back. That's just one. I mean, we're also talking about Jaron and Zach getting into foul trouble very early, which, to me, them not being on the floor at times, especially in that third quarter, is part of what allowed the Timberwolves to really kind of rein it back in on their end defensively, because you couldn't set those ball screens. You didn't have the personnel to do it. Mind you, both of those guys also got dinged for offensive fouls on moving screens.
Yep.
So when you have that whole mix of issues going on, especially when you're like, man, we really need those fouls, especially if we can get them defensively. Okay, cool. They just picked up a foul on a screen that we kind of want them to use.
It's a cocktail of disaster right now on defense. It's a Jim Jones, Jonestown,
cocktail right now. Buddy.
That's what it is right now. And what I struggle with is, you know, most teams, even when you have these types of struggles on the defensive end, I can point out like one positive. Like, okay, this guy's playing well. I thought he gave effort last night. I can't look at anybody, any singular thing on the defensive end right now and say that's a positive. I have appreciated that. And Jaren Jackson Jr. is a former Defensive Player of the Year, but his usefulness with the way that his teammates are defending just goes into the dumps. He can't do anything about it.
So my thing with Jaren on this is, for one, he's always been prone to the fouls, which that very well could just come down to his style of play and what his role kind of entails. He is, like, correct me if I'm wrong, if you see it differently, but I've always seen him as, okay, we've got four guys either on man or in their zone, and then you have a rover.
Yes.
Jaren just completely just always moving around, helping on switches or just taking on guys that are driving. But that style, especially when he goes for these blocks, gets you into foul trouble.
Well, and it hurts to be a rover when no one else can defend on the perimeter, so you have to always be the helper.
Yeah.
Consistently be the helper. You can't be a rover. You can't maximize your skill set.
No.
When the things around you are happening. And I don't know how this gets fixed. And I feel for Tomas Asalo, who took over not too long ago. He can't get practice in. He can't help them with defense right now. For God's sakes, they got checked into the hotel last night at 4 a.m. Mountain Time in Denver. They're not even going to have a shoot around. They can barely do a film session. I can't blame him for this.
No, they need to sleep.
This is just this team not having the personnel and the personnel not knowing what they're doing out there, being late to closeouts, not understanding the rotations, everything. Is just come together to make this one of the worst defensive teams post-trade deadline in the entire NBA.
And the funny part about it is the fact that at that trade deadline, you move two of your better perimeter defenders.
Sure.
Jake LaRavia was one of the best perimeter defenders in the league at the time of him getting moved. And when it also comes to not having the personnel of all the players to get hurt, obviously none of us hope or pray for any injury by any stretch. Absolutely not. We hate that for everybody. But of all players to get hurt at this time in the schedule, in the season, it just had to be Brandon Clark, one of your closing players, one of your closing bigs in the
best
front court.
Best defenders in the front court, one of your best defenders who can switch.
And, of course, the other one.
The best perimeter defender.
Jalen Wells, your best perimeter defender, right now turning out to be one of the better young 3-and-D wings out there. And now you're missing, that's essentially all of your offense from be that part of your starting and your second unit and your closing five.
You know what stinks? Is
a lot.
Well, a lot, yes. But I think the thing that bothers me the most is you felt like you had solved some of your perimeter issues, your wing issues, this offseason. Vince Williams Jr., G.G. Jackson, you brought in a guy like Scottie Pippen Jr., who's a pretty tenacious defender in his own right.
Pippen was fun. He's always fun.
Jalen Wells, you bring in the second round. And like Scottie Pippen Jr. and Jalen Wells, I don't want to take anything away from them. They've been great. G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., not the same.
Sure.
But I feel like you're back at square one where you've been just about every single offseason if you're Zach Kleiman. You need to find a guy in that Dylan Brooks mold, play perimeter defense, knock down shots when he's asked to, not be a shot chucker. Like you're still in the – you still have the same exact needs you've had through this entire build with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Desmond Bain going into the offseason. And I don't know if you have the room to maneuver like you've had in the past. That's a stark reality of where we're at right now. And I don't envy Zach Kleiman and the decisions he's going to have to make this offseason. You have a Luke extension. You have a Santi extension. You have a lot of things you have to figure out. You have the Jaren extension. Will he make All-NBA? He's going to make $345 million. If he does, you're going to have your hands tied even more with a Supermax. So I it's tough. It's tough to think about what they need to do this. I know what they need to do this offseason. Well, they need to find some perimeter defenders who can knock down shots when they're asked of them. But I don't know if they're going to have the ability to make those moves in any easy or meaningful way. Now, I'm going to run something by you.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the age-old question about are my eyes lying to me or are the stats telling me the truth or which one's lying.
Mm-hmm.
So since Tomas Asalo has taken over, we know Zach Edey's been playing better. We know Ja Morant's been playing better. And I think those two are tied together. Ja's getting a lot more space off Zach Edey's screens. Zach Edey is rolling, getting into the dunker spot, staying around the rim, and he gets putbacks, he gets drop-offs. It all works out. He's rebounding better because of that as well. But since Tomas Asalo has taken over, Zach Edey has gone from 13 on-ball screens per game to 30 per game. And I look at the way the offense has run recently, and my eyes tell me it looks better. My eyes tell me Tomas Asalo has taken over and done a better job. Now, in contrast to that, the statistics don't tell you that at all. They're just about the exact same. Three-point percentage, two-point percentage, points per game, all of that. It's almost the exact same thing. There's no real difference. So while my eyes tell me that it looks better right now, I think that my eyes might be lying to me. And the reason I say that is because when you want your eyes to tell you something, what do you want to see the Grizzlies do? You want to see Ja Morant be first and foremost. You want to see Ja Morant go off for 36 like he did last night. Go off for 30 points per game in a month like he's done in April. That's what you want to see. That's visually pleasing.
Yep.
That's what everybody watches the Grizzlies, goes to the arena for. So my eyes are telling me that looks better. But when I look around the rest of the roster, and I look at, I don't know, Santi Aldama and how he's played since Tomas Asalo's been here. Big dip in offensive production. Huge dip. Only had 5 points last night. I look at a guy like, I'm losing my mind here. Luke Kennard. Luke Kennard didn't even play last night. Luke Kennard was a nice spot-up three-point shooter with Taylor Jenkins. Looked good. Had some spike games. Hasn't been anything with Tomas Asalo. So, like, I look at the way things are going. I see what I see on a night-to-night basis. I see Ja Morant going off. I see Zach Edey being maximized. And it looks better. But my question is it actually better? And I don't know the full answer to that. But I am having this internal conflict right now of what my eyes are telling me and what the stats are telling me.
So, I don't blame you because that was my first thought as well, is, okay, this is looking a lot better. I think a lot of that has been our, as a fan base and as people that cover the Grizzlies, our big issue with a lot of the way that the offense functioned earlier on throughout the beginning, you know, 80, 90% of the season is, where's Ja?
Yeah.
Where is Ja
Morant? Where are the ball screens?
Where is the frontline help for him? Where is the making space for him to either drop it off to his big or just get to the rack? And we're seeing that now, and that's Isalo's offense. That is what Tuomas Isalo wants to do. That's, if you go back and watch anything that he did in Europe, it's a lot of that, but there's also a lot of movement.
Sure.
What the issue that I'm seeing is, this is almost turning into that stagnant
2022-2023 offense that couldn't get anything done in the half court.
No, where we're seeing, which we're seeing a little bit more of the movement around. We've seen more of it than
I thought it dissipated as you got later in the game and they got tired, but that's
well,
a different discussion.
That is a very different discussion. But to that point, the big thing that we've been wanting and looking for is to see Ja Morant play well. And he's doing that. However, if it's at the cost of, if you look at everyone else's numbers, Jaren's numbers are down. Dez has actually been a lot better lately,
he's
but I
good.
Think that's also because
he's also getting ball screens from Zach Edey.
He is also playing a lot of that primary lead guard ball handling role when either Ja is not on the floor or when Ja says, bro, I just took on five guys at the same time. I need a breather. I'm going to go hang out in the corner, which that is what it is. When he's putting up 30-plus points a game, I expect him to take some possessions off. When you have a guard like Bane on the floor with him, that makes it more feasible to do. That's acceptable. I'm okay with that. And Dez has not suffered from it. He's been a lot better around the rim this season, kind of as a whole, right? But, okay, so are we saying that our offense is only going to be our lead guard scoring or our big coming off the roll? Like, that's not sustainable.
Yeah, and it's
that
predictable.
Gets you into
and
trouble.
I think that's what you saw, especially in that third quarter. The
Against
Timberwolves,
a good coach like Chris Finch.
The Timberwolves went into halftime, and they're saying, guys, they're spamming ball screens for Ja Morant, Desmond Bane. We know what this is. We saw this in 2022 in a playoff series. We saw this the past 4 years before they changed the offense with Taylor Jenkins and Nola Roche going into this season. So let's just defend them how we always have defended them. So, like, that's why you saw the drop-off in the second half.
Yeah.
I think more so than what you're talking about and wanting Ja to be at the forefront of everything, I think most reasonable-minded people have wanted to see a melding of what Noah LaRoche and Taylor Jenkins were doing versus what Tomas Asalo is doing right now. But you're not seeing that. I'm going to be honest with you. You're not really seeing that.
No.
And I just want to reference the stat I referenced earlier to prove that.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-Tomas Asalo, Zach Edey was setting 13 ball screens a game. He's up to 30. He's doubled that plus. So that's not a melding of equal opportunity and ball screens for Ja. That is zero or 100 one way or the other. And I have been clamoring for it. Connor and I have been clamoring for it. You just need to try to meld these things. Now, that also can go into, okay, they haven't had enough time to practice under Tomas Asalo, so they have to rely on what they have at
the
their
basics.
Disposal right
it,
now.
It,
and the
it's
basics.
The basics, yeah.
But I will say that is another sort of thing that I'm noticing. It's not a melding of the two philosophies. It
no.
is very much zero to 100. Let's spam ball screens as much as we can for Ja Morant because we're comfortable with it.
And to that point, because I don't disagree, like that's what clearly what it is. That's not just what it looks like. That's what it is right now. I don't think, while that is a core tenet of Isalo's offense, I don't think it's supposed to be that way. Like, because whenever he first got hired or brought in, excuse me, as the interim head coach, I'm like, how is this going to change? I want to go like see what I can find. And, of course, looking through social media, you know, guys like Anthony Sain have done a really good job of just putting out as much just raw information as possible. In watching some of the film from last year with Paris, which, mind you, was the highest rated offense in the world.
The Euroleague, yeah.
Well,
for sure, in the world.
The world, yeah. But for sure in the Euroleague by not a small margin. It was a lot of ball screen, but it wasn't just ball screens from the big. It was a lot of movement. While it might not have been equal opportunity like LaRoche was wanting, where it's just ball movement, it was more man movement. It was movement with or without the ball. And right now it's kind of just, okay, we haven't practiced that. We don't know where we need or want to be at certain points in time. Let's just go to the most simple.
Jago, cook at the rim.
Yeah.
If you can drop it off to Zach, drop it off to Zach. If not, drive
him. Or if Zach rolls and there's no one around him, take it over top to him and he'll just be in space alone. But that's just the literal cut and dry, most basic, bare bones, simple pick and roll. Like, it's like from like the 60s. Like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is as long as we've played basketball.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
To your point, they need to just, I think, kind of just get through this. And if he's the guy. I don't want to say get other players because that's a lot easier said. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's easier said than done, but you'll have more time to actually work on what it's supposed to be.
All right. Now, we'll do this. Only have a few minutes.
I know where this is going.
I love your whatever the hell that was.
Well, because I know exactly where this is going.
That was a cringe in real time. You, that was an audible cringe that you just heard from George Ruggiero. John Morant spoke on his new, I'm going to put in air quotes, grenade. Celebration. And he said, this is what he said about his new celebration. Listen, it's not what you think it is. I'm taking my words and I'm throwing them out there. I'm speaking Ja. I'm being Ja. I'm going to take my words. I'm going to throw them out there. And then I'm going to block out the noise. And that's what I'm doing. So when you see me do that, that's what I'm doing. I'm saying what I got to say to the world and I'm blocking out the noise in the midst of what's coming back my way. And that's how it's going to be. I'll give my reaction in just a moment, but I want to go to our morning show and to Evan Cohen, because this is how Ja's explanation is being talked about nationally. That was Evan Cohen this morning on Unsportsmanlike talking about Ja and his explanation for his new celebration, saying it's not a grenade, but it's me throwing out my words to the world and blocking out the noise. I'm going to preface this as I normally do. What the NBA did in fining Ja $75,000 for a celebration that everyone does in the NBA. LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves did it the other night. Like, everybody does it. It was ridiculous. It was a miscarriage of justice. It was. I think the 25-game suspension he got for flashing a gun on Instagram Live, when you compare it to his peers and Miles Bridges, who is accused of beating up his girlfriend, and Jackson Hayes, same thing, and you know Kevin Porter Jr., when you compare it to his peers, 25-game suspension, too much. But I'm going to say it. I ultimately agree wholeheartedly with Evan Cohen in this situation. I think there's a level of maturity to letting these things roll off your back and just moving on with your life. The more that you try to poke and prod at an entity like the NBA, at a guy like Adam Silver, the more problems are going to go your way, come your way. And for a guy like Ja, I think it would absolutely behoove him to listen and just move on, not be at the center of all this controversy all of the time. To just try his darndest to let these things go out the window. The quicker that your name is out of the spotlight for things like this, the quicker you can get to a spot that you want to be in, where you're not being treated unfairly, where you're not being criticized for things you don't think you should be criticized for. That's something he needs to understand. The more you poke and prod, the more you do things like this, the more is going to come your way. And I think, based on everything I've heard from Ja Morant the past 2 years with all the trouble he's been through, I think he wants that to be the case. He wants to stop being criticized. He wants people to stop using his name. He wants to stop being unfairly criticized and taken to task by the NBA. So I agree with Evan Cohen. There's a maturity I want to see him show. And I talked about it yesterday. There's a line between you being treated unfairly where you can cross into being a martyr. And I think that Ja is riding that line way too much right this second. And he may have crossed into martyr with the way he's speaking on these things. And I will say, and I know I'm being funny, a little tongue-in-cheek, you're throwing a grenade, brother, and covering your ears. Don't go full Elon Musk, my heart goes out to you. Please don't do the never go full Elon.
I'm not going to give him that that last designation. I'm just
the explanation for throwing a grenade. Come on. No, we're not doing that.
You know what? That's not what that is. That is, you know what? In the words of our great and illustrious colleague here, he's telling his story.
He is telling his story,
you know, as one Jeffrey Wright would say, but I can't disagree. I mean, at all, like 100%, there needs to be, and I don't think it, in, I guess, response to a lot of the way that other people are talking about the overall context as well, in that we have other people as well on these airwaves, like one Chris Canty talking about, okay, they need to go a completely different direction in their coaching search.
Yeah, he said they need to get a fire breather. No.
You know, for one, I don't think they need to go that far, but there does need to be some, maybe not even someone else who needs to hold him accountable. It needs to come with that maturity where he needs to hold himself accountable.
That's exactly.
In the situation. It isn't about saying
100%,
they have to
George.
Get someone else in here to do it. He should be able to look in the mirror and reflect and say, hold up, wait a second. I have NBA on TNT saying, you know, all these negative things that I need to focus more on basketball. Mind you, in a game where he drops 36, 37
sure.
points, but, you know, that's besides the point. We have our own issues with that program. But then we've got people calling me a clown. And we're not talking about folks on social media. We're not talking about NBA Twitter, which, cesspool. Don't
yes.
go there if you can help it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about legitimate either former players, media members saying these things. Now we can say that there is the narrative. This isn't just social media getting to Ja.
Right.
These are actual people in the media saying, man, that's immature. Man, what a clown.
Yeah.
And if you want that to stop, that's where you have to actually reflect and say, why am I doing this? What am I doing this for? You know, is it just to stay in the limelight? Because if that's the case, you can do that just by
being... I don't think that's the case. I think by most of the things I've heard Ja talk about, he wants to be
out of these headlines, away from this. And if you want to just stay in the limelight, but in a good way, just play like you did last night. He had a good game.
Yeah. And how about no three-point celebration, maybe? I don't know.
I'm fine with covering the ears, like, just doing that on its own, because to me, that reads to me like, hear no evil.
Listen, I'll say what I said. I think Ja has been unfairly treated in certain situations by the NBA.
Agree.
But what he's doing right now, you cannot deny it's perpetuating the problem he wants to run away from.
Yeah.
So
absolutely,
there just has to be a come
What's
to Jesus moment here. There has to be a come to Jesus moment for Ja Morant. Do I want to keep putting myself in the line of fire like this, or do I want to move on, grow, be more mature? I don't. We'll see. We'll see how he responds to that. But it's about time. And to your point, and I'm glad you brought it up this way, because Chris Canty did say, you know, Ja Morant needs a fire breather coach that's going to hold him accountable. Do you really think? Let's bring up the fire breather coach that just got fired by the Nuggets, Michael Malone.
Whew.
You think Michael Malone and Ja Morant would make a good, if you're being real with yourself, you think that would make a good mix?
That would be
volatile as hell.
He wasn't
Ja
a good
would ask
mix
for a
with
trade.
Jamal Murray, of all people.
Ja would ask for a trade. Ja would hate that. I don't think you need someone to come in here and just berate Ja every step of the way. That's a recipe for disaster. But to your point, and I've been saying this as well as you just did, you need to get a coach that empowers Ja to hold himself accountable. You need to have the rest of the roster, by the way, player leaders, hold Ja accountable.
Yeah.
That should not be on a head coach. If you're a high-functioning, playoff-level, championship-contending franchise, your star players should not need to be held accountable every single day by a head coach. It's a recipe for disaster if you have that thought process in your head. So I disagree, and I think there's a misnomer out there in the national media about the next coach that needs to come in for Ja Morant. You don't need a fire breather. You need someone that's going to empower Ja to hold himself accountable, to make himself more mature. So we'll see how that goes this offseason. Feels like Tomas Asala's in the lead, though. Have to throw that out there.
Problem.
Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll cover the rest of the NBA with Trevor Lane. He's from Lakers Nation and Front Office Show, the Front Office Show with Keith Smith.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He's on the other side. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and joining me now is host of Lakers Nation, also of the Front Office Show with Keith Smith. That'd be Trevor Lane on X at Trevor_Lane. Trevor, how's it going, brother?
Going well. I mean, exciting time of year. We've got the NBA playoffs almost getting settled here. We got to see what how the standings all shake out, but it's a fun time of year for basketball. So I am thrilled. I'm excited.
Almost getting settled, I think, is the key word there. Tonight, yeah. The Grizzlies lost the Timberwolves last night, and I don't know if you saw their travel schedule. Do they need to file a grievance with the NBA for how they were done in this situation? You have an 8:30 game against the Timberwolves at home, then you have to play that game. You lose, you travel about a 3-hour flight, then you go from the airport in Denver to the hotel. You check in, I think it was like 4 a.m., they said, Mountain Time, by the time they were checking in, so they didn't get into their beds till 5 a.m. That feels like a grievance with the NBA should be filed. That's rough.
It is one of my biggest pet peeves with the NBA. It is back-to-backs on the road. When you're traveling, you get in the wee hours of the morning, and then you've got to sleep for a few hours and then go play another NBA game less than 24 hours after your prior one tipped off. It's insane. I think we would see the quality of play go up in the NBA. I bet we would see injuries go down too if there was some way to eliminate back-to-backs on the road. I would love to eliminate back-to-backs in general.
Sure.
But at least at home, you get to go sleep in your own bed. You're not on a plane flying and all of that. Back-to-backs on the road, they are a problem in the NBA, and there needs to be some solution for them because it's ridiculous, and you're right, the Grizzlies are going to bear the brunt of it tonight.
Yeah, and with 4-8, between 4-8 being separated by one game, this is not the good time to have that type of travel schedule. Kind of rough. All right, now we have a lot to catch up on, and I want to go back to Wednesday night where Luka and the Lakers traveled to Dallas. That was a hell of a scene. I don't think we have any precedent for what we saw. A guy scores 45 against his former team and gets a standing ovation from the home crowd after just eviscerating their team.
Yeah, it's not often that you're going to have a player in a situation where they're going to beat the hometown team and get cheered on while they're doing it by the hometown crowd. Very rare that you're going to see something like that happen, but that was an unbelievable scene. Credit to the Mavs for that, the tribute video that they gave out and everything. And credit to those Mavs fans. Wow, the fans in the building, did they just perfectly reflect the sentiment of Mavs fandom in general right now? From the cheers for Luka, the Luka chants, to the fire Nikos at every stoppage in play. I thought, and I've seen a lot of Mavs fans echo this sentiment, that they thought that home crowd did a phenomenal job of making their feelings known.
Yeah, they sure did. I mean, the fire Nico chants, there were like 2 a quarter, it felt like. Every time Luka hit a bucket, and he hit a lot of buckets, he had 45 points. I'm curious your opinion on this. Are they ever going to be able to bring back some of the fans they lost through this trade? And if they are, how do they do that? What are the steps they would have to take to ultimately get fans back on board with where they are right now?
Well, I think that there's two elements to it. And number one is the old adage that time heals all wounds. Over time, I think fans will gravitate back towards the Mavs, towards the hometown team, all of that. I think time heals all wounds, and that over time will happen. But in the near term, there is one way, one path and one path only, and that's win. That's the only way. They have to, if they win, and I'm talking about win the whole thing, they can point to that and go, see, this is why. This is why we did this, and we can forever hang this banner, and it was worth it. But their window, Nico Harrison himself was talking about it being maybe a 3-year, maybe a 4-year window. It's, year one is already slammed shut after Kyrie's injury. Year two might be too, because they might not see him until towards the end of the season.
Right.
That's rough. Now you're talking about year three of this, of the window with this group, and it's a, you know, what is it, 34-year-old Anthony Davis, 35-year-old Kyrie. That's a tough spot for the Mavs to be in right now. So it looks doubtful that they'll be able to do that and get fans back by winning. But that was the one path. If they win, then they'll be proven right.
Yeah, and I think one thing that could help in the interim is firing Nico Harrison. But I got to be honest with you, Trevor. I don't know if that's going to happen, because it feels like the governor, Patrick Dumont, and him were on the same page. And if you keep Nico around, there's just going to be a mistrust. And I do think even if you fire him, There's a mistrust there between the fan base and Patrick Dumont, who took over for Mark Cuban not too long ago.
Absolutely. I mean, as Mark Cuban has said a couple of times in a few different interviews, that he would not have made the trade. I mean, Nico Harrison can present the plan. Ownership gets to decide whether or not they actually go through with it. And while they backed him on it, you know, right now it's fire Nico, but there's maybe not enough, I guess, ire being thrown at the ownership group right now for the Mavericks, because they're the ones that ultimately had to, and I know it was a big part of Nico's plan and he was on board with this and all of that, but they're the ones that ultimately say yes or no. And I would think that most owners around the NBA would not trade Luka, especially given the return and the situation.
I talked about this yesterday, but I want to know your thoughts on this. Is this another example of sort of new owner syndrome, where they get in there, they want to make their changes, whatever they see fit? You saw it with Matt Ishbia with the Suns, and obviously they're out of contention. They're going to try to get Brad Beal off that roster going into next season. Like, it just feels like when the owners take over, or new governors, I should say, take over, they want to put their imprint on it however they can, and usually it doesn't work out.
Yeah, we see this all the time in businesses in general. Somebody new takes over, and what they need to do is they need to make changes so they can point to something and say, see, this is what I did. This is what I brought. There was an anonymous NBA owner who said, I forget, I think it was an ESPN article, but said something to the effect of, my advice to every new owner, and they never follow it, is don't do anything for a year to 18
right.
months, because it takes that time to get settled in, and you can make some really damaging moves while thinking that you know everything and you haven't really learned the ropes yet. And that could be what's going on here. I'll tell you what, that is actually the preferred reason here for why the Mavs ownership decided to do this, because the other reason for them doing it, aside from the conspiracy theories about them wanting to move the team and everything, but the other reason would be they didn't want to give Luka a supermax contract, and they were being cheap on that end. If you're a Mavs fan, you'd rather have it be they made a mistake while the training wheels were still on versus, we're starting a trend here of their being cheap in a situation like this with a generational star. I'd rather have it be the former than the latter, that's for sure.
It's just so funny to me, because here in Memphis, Robert Parra always comes up, and he's got a lot of money, and people wonder if he's cheap, if he doesn't want to spend money on this franchise. He's never in town. He's very hands-off. I actually prefer that, though, to be honest with you. I think the governor, the owner, should just throw the money out there, hire the people in the personnel department to make the decisions, and let them make the decisions. Because every time that an ownership group thinks that they're good at personnel, they always flail around. It's a tale as old as time. And you look at it, all across sports. And I know that, like, in the NFL, like the Cowboys with Jerry Jones and the Jones family, uh-huh. they've had that team for a long time. But they have their hands all over the personnel decision-making, and it has cost that franchise dearly in the 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. The best kind of owner is one with deep pockets that's willing to spend and will stay out of the way. We'll let the basketball people do their jobs, or if it's football, you know, whatever the sport is, we'll let those people make the decisions, do their jobs, listen to them. Of course, they're going to have input. It's their money, but we'll ultimately not meddle too much. And unfortunately, that's what we've been seeing happen. Again, you mentioned the Suns already. We saw it happen with the Suns. We're seeing it happen now with the Dallas Mavericks, and it's not ideal for the sustainability of a sports franchise.
Right. Now, we have not talked about the Michael Malone situation. He was fired 3 games before the Nuggets are heading into a postseason situation, whether that be play-in or playoffs. I think if they win tonight, they are – I don't know if they're guaranteed a playoff spot. I'd have to go check that. But either way, Nuggets fire Michael Malone. David Adelman is going to be the interim. What did you make of that decision ultimately? And also they got rid of Calvin Booth. It felt like there was – sort of behind the scenes, a rift between Michael Malone and Calvin Booth. Mm-hmm. And instead of picking one side, ownership said, both of you get out of here. I'm tired of dealing with you and your drama.
Yeah, this was, Gabe, this is the second time this season that I've had to double check to see if Shams Charania got hacked.
Right.
I could not believe that Michael Malone was being let go by the Denver Nuggets after winning a championship and all. And a lot of coaches around the NBA have said, this is proof that, you know, we're never safe. It's the nature of the business. It's the way things go. Being a head coach in the NBA is not one with a lot of stability in it. But I was shocked. You know, we were surprised when the Grizz did what they did.
Sure.
With 9 games to play. Everybody was aghast that how could they do this with 9 games to play? It's so close. The Nuggets did it with 3 games. It's the latest that we've ever seen a playoff team remove their head coach in a season. I mean, shocking to say the least, but apparently ownership said they had made the decision. They knew they were going to fire Michael Malone over the summer and said, let's just rip the Band-Aid off and do it now and see if we get a little bit of a boost, given how tight things are in the West. Sometimes you do get that. You get what gets called, you know, the dead cat bounce, right, where your team can sometimes respond for a few games to a coach being fired. Over the long haul, it usually doesn't fix a whole lot, but over the short term, it can. And so maybe this is enough to get the Denver Nuggets to lock down a playoff and not play-in spot in the Western Conference. We'll see what that looks like. But I was completely shocked that they moved on from Michael Malone. I know he's, you know, every coach has their point where they hit a stage where the players start to tune them out, where those fiery words of Michael Malone, they start to fall on deaf ears. And apparently that's where we were. But still, to make that drastic of a change right before the playoffs is tough. And you know what? Coach Bisola with the Grizz was talking about it a couple weeks ago, saying the challenge for him is he doesn't have time to change all that.
No much. Practices. And right.
You're right. No practices, no opportunities to really – so you can only make minor tweaks. So I do wonder, how much does it really change going to David Adelman for the Denver Nuggets with even a few weeks ago, Lasola talking about the same thing?
Well, here's the thing. The stat that just jumps off the page about the Michael Malone firing, even more so than the Taylor Jenkins firing, of course, is 4 of the last 6 championship head coaches got fired by the team that they ultimately won a championship with. And Nick Nurse is in that group, Frank Vogel in that group, Mike Budenholzer in that group as well. I ask this all the time to whoever is willing to at least give me an answer or try to give me an answer. But why is NBA head coaching seemingly so unstable compared to a lot of other American sports? I think the NHL is pretty unstable, too, with head coaches. But the NBA, it takes the cake just because of that stat I just read off. 4 of the last 6 championship head coaches have been fired by the team that they won a championship with.
I think it's as simple as it's a more of a superstar-driven league than some of the other leagues. You know, you look at the NFL and you look at the system that a coach brings in and how much of an impact that's going to have. And the difference that one player can make on an NBA team, it is very difficult to change over a roster, and it can lead to very long-term ramifications in terms of the salary cap and how you manage that. It's very easy to change out a coach. That oftentimes before teams are going to say, we're going to drastically change our roster, let's try changing the coach first and see if that works, because it's much easier. And it can be painful because the coach's salary is guaranteed. You've got teams that are paying coaches for 2, 3, 4 years after they're not coaching the team anymore. That hurts on the bottom line, but that doesn't affect your salary cap. That doesn't affect your ability to build out your team. And so teams go to changing out their coach first before trying to make kind of sweeping changes to the roster itself. And I think that's all the big part of why it is, you know, the NBA head coaching cycle. It's just such a revolving door.
Doesn't it seem like that needs to be rethought? Because I feel like it's like a 50-50 split. It works, it doesn't. Obviously, you have the example of Cleveland this year, where they go to Kenny Atkinson and he immediately gets them to the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They're locked in. They've been awesome all year. But also, you have an example like we've seen in Phoenix, right, where you switch up the coaching, you bring in Mike Budenholzer, and it's an absolute disaster. Abject failure, and they're going to have to blow that thing up, even though they wanted to hold on to those players this offseason. So it feels like there's still a 50-50 split, even though this always sort of ends in one way, where the coach gets fired and the players stay on board.
Well, I mean, ownership's not going to fire themselves, right? Sometimes we'll see a GM get changed out, as we saw with Denver. Well, they will switch out, and the Nuggets are in a tough spot in terms of their cap and everything. They'll switch out a general manager, a decision maker at that level. But oftentimes it's just the hope that a new voice can change something, that you get kind of the Kenny Atkinson effect, that's able to shift things enough. But it's just, I think Steve Kerr, who is obviously as entrenched with the Warriors as any coach around the NBA, said, look, this is the fate that we all know at some point is going to befall us. I mean, you get some rare examples of coaches who are able to spend their entire career with the team and they get to decide when they want to walk away. But those are few and far between. Even the best coaches find themselves at some point being let go by their clubs. And it's just the nature of the beast in the NBA. Should it be that way? Maybe, maybe not. But based on the way the system is set up, teams prefer to try to change the coach before they try to change out the personnel.
Yep. Now, final thing, I'm sure you watched Grizzlies versus Timberwolves last night. And the way I explained it, a little bit earlier before you came on, was it felt like the first half for the Grizzlies was a sugar high. They shot 70% from the field. It was absolutely ridiculous, but the defense still stinks. And you saw that show through in the second half. When they weren't shooting 70% from the field, the Timberwolves were getting whatever they wanted. And in that third quarter, I can't stress it enough. 18 for 21 from the field were the Timberwolves, and they set a franchise record of 52 points. I cannot understand how the Grizzlies have devolved so badly on the defensive end. It boggles the mind. I know they traded away some guys, Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia. I know Jalen Wells got hurt the other night, but it doesn't feel like it should be as bad as it is right this second.
Yeah, and it really felt like there was a point where the energy let down from the Grizz. Some of that is human nature. Even when you do contest it, like Julius Randle's hitting like fadeaway turnarounds and stuff like that.
Sure.
And just naturally, there's a point where you're just getting beaten down, and you just – do you make that extra rotation? Do you make that extra effort? That will to do so starts to wane. And I think we saw a little bit of that from the Grizz. I thought they compounded their problems a lot with some really sloppy turnovers, too, in that quarter, and that got the Wolves even more off to a run because the Grizz kept giving them the ball back and just creating all kinds of problems there. But – It's a big challenge on the defensive end of the floor for them right now. You saw Ja doing Ja things. I mean, he's getting in the paint, the acrobatics, scoring, doing all that. Dez Bane got going a little bit, and still, it's just not enough when you can't get stops, and especially when an opponent part of it was the Wolves were just unsustainably hot, right? And so essentially ended the game in the third quarter. Will teams always go for 52? No, obviously that's a huge outlier, but sometimes teams just get hot. But I thought the Grizzlies compounded that, the hot shooting from the Wolves, with just mistakes on their own end. And defensively, they do miss Jalen Wells. And obviously that was a scary moment with him. They do miss Marcus Smart. And this is also, you and I have talked about this in the past. This also goes back to why we were hoping to see them add some pieces at the trade deadline. And they just, they didn't do it. And it's put them in a tough spot now, and now they go into Denver tonight with a Nuggets team that badly wants to win this game, and now Jamal Murray might be returning just in time to play the Grizzlies. So,
of course,
whatever's going on with them defensively, they got to figure it out quick.
Now, last thing I do want to get your opinion on, more so the names, or if you think it's Tomas Asalo himself, I'm curious what you think the next coach of the Grizzlies needs to be in regards to sort of attitude, his ideology. What do you think the Grizzlies should be looking for in their next head coach?
Well, I mean, I think there definitely needs to be a sort of defensive identity brought to this team. They need to be somebody that can bring in and really figure out a way to get this team to defend without fouling. You look at Jaren Jackson Jr., you look at Zach Edey, you've got tremendous size, you've got shot blocking. They can't stay on the floor because they keep committing fouls and oftentimes silly fouls. You need somebody who can really fit that bill. And then from there is going to enable Ja Morant to play Ja's game while at the same time getting him to be a bit more efficient operating out of the pick and roll. And that's where it's really tough, I think, to check both of those boxes at the same time, getting a strong defensive mind as a head coach while bringing in somebody who can also get the best out of this team offensively. I would be looking for one or the other for the head coach and then bringing in assistants that can fill those. For example, I think Frank Vogel would do wonders with this team's defense. I don't know if he's the head coach, but he would do wonders with his defense. If you can bring somebody in that can handle the offensive side, because that is not Frank's forte, I think Vogel would be a tremendous coach to get this team to play defense at the level that they need to be at.
I hear you. Well, Trevor, you the man. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too, Gabe.
Yes, sir. He is Trevor Lane, at Trevor_Lane on X, host of Lakers Nation, also the front office show with Keith Smith. Now, we need to pivot. We need to go ahead and bring on David Cobb coming up next. And I have one story in particular I really want to highlight with him. And it happens to be at the University of Tennessee with Nico Iamaleava. He's asking for more money, but his dad says he's not. Let's try to sort through all the rumors coming up next with David.